Good afternoon. My name is Rachel Elbin. I am a member of the Clark Forum Student Board and a senior anthropology major. On behalf of the Clark Forum and the Department of Anthropology, I'd like to welcome you to today's final lecture on transnational gender and sexuality issues, the personal is personal, predicaments of the lesbian feminist in Japan. Increasingly, anthropologists pay attention to the ways in which widened channels of trade and communications within transnational networks influence the information of gendered beliefs and sexual identities. In Japan, lesbian identities are in constant dialogue with American lesbian feminist concepts. Karen Kelski received her PhD in cultural anthropology from the University of Hawaii. Currently a professor of anthropology and chair of the East Asian Languages and Cultures Department at the University of Illinois, Kelski concentrates her research on Japan's lesbian community and the politics of transgenderism. In 2001, Dr. Kelski published her book, Women on the Verge, Japanese Women, Western Dreams, which explores gendered trends within internationalization. Presently, Kelski is concentrating on the completion of her book, The Personal is Personal, Reading the Lesbian in Contemporary Japan, a cultural studies-based exploration of the major lesbian popular texts of the last 20 years. Please keep in mind the panel discussion that will take place at 4:30 in this room, at which time our two speakers will discuss their research with the audience. Unfortunately, Karen Kelski is not able to be with us today. Professor Ann Hill, chair of the Anthropology Department, will present her work. At this time, I would like to ask you to disable all electronic devices. Also, please hold all questions until the panel discussion, which is to be held at 4:30. Because this program is being taped and some audience members may be hearing impaired, please wait until the microphone has been brought to you before beginning to speak. And now, please join me in welcoming Professor Ann Hill.
Thank you, and thank you for your in advance for your forbearance. I'm going to be reading this paper by Karen Kelski about a very prominent Japanese feminist whose book is pictured here, the cover of this lesbian feminist text. There are three things I think you should pay attention to as I talk, and one of these is the way in which Kake Fuda, who is the feminist in question here, the lesbian feminist in question, explores the invisibility of lesbian feminism and the lesbian feminist in Japan, and what she has to say about this invisibility. A second thing is the dialogue that goes on between her and American lesbian feminism. And thirdly, I would say attend to why this Japanese feminist, Kake Fuda, has opted for privacy, what she has to say about privacy as a strategy. So those are three things to pay attention to as you listen to my Midwestern monotone. We have some PowerPoint slides that Karen Kelski was kind enough to send along, which I will show you in due course. This talk, as you know from your program, is The Personal is Personal, Dilemmas of the Lesbian Feminist Subject in the 1990s in Japan. In this essay, Karen says, I examine the first full-length work of lesbian criticism ever published in Japan, Kake Fuda's 1992 book, What It Means to Be a Lesbian. And this, as I said, is the cover of the book. Kake Fuda, in the late 1980s, was the first lesbian to come out publicly in Japanese media. And in 1992, when she was 28, wrote this book, To Be a Lesbian. This is still considered one of the foundational texts in Japanese lesbian critical writing. I will explore this work's articulation of an emergent Japanese lesbian feminist subject as it both closely parallels American 1970s lesbian feminist social criticism and at the same time sharply departs from it in its delineation of a specifically Japanese lesbian experience. I'll discuss also the specific sites of convergence between Kakefuda's writing and American lesbian feminist literature. I explore these in order to reflect on the permutations of American lesbian feminist theory in its transnational travels. And as you know, transnational phenomena and transnational travels and what travels are some of the is part of the focus of this set of talks today. Karen Kelsky is also going to consider the real-time political economic conditions for the emergence of a self-conscious lesbian subjectivity in different locations in the world. Kakefuda's work shows the ways that even close similarities or parallels, that is, between American lesbian feminism and Japanese lesbian feminism, are mediated through local histories. So she's in comparing these two different traditions, she's looking at this dynamic between transnational and the local, the transnational being American lesbian feminism and the local, of course, being Japanese lesbian feminism. It has been argued recently that Kakefuda's book was an early articulation of Japanese queer theory in the mode of Foucault and Butler. I will argue instead that Kakefuda's was a rights-based defense of the individual woman and her taboo desires, and as such is less a queer move than a feminist defense of female lesbian sexual autonomy. Indeed, Kakefuda's book is a blistering critique of Japanese heteropatriarchy, touching on themes ranging from marriage and family to education, the economy, and the European system, and the emperor system. More than anything, it is a long meditation on the subjectivity of the lesbian in the context of an oppressive, heteronormative, patriarchal social environment so dominant as to be beyond the realm of critique or even identification as an environment as such. The lesbian subject in Kukufata's text is a negative in the sense of a non-possibility, a category that is not permitted to exist. Kakefuda painstakingly analyzes the operations of Japan's heteropatriarchal power, tracing its origins in the role of women in the Japanese family structure to particular distillation in the straight pornographic imaginary. Her writing, I argue, sets out to expose this power and construct the lesbian subject in negative relation to it. The lesbian is not what others ignore, what others desire, what others claim to know, what others reject. The title of Kakefuda's work, What It Means to Be a Lesbian, reflects a scrupulous intentionality in revealing the modes of power, including those that animate heterosexual Japanese feminist and gay male activist movements that render the lesbian subject not just invisible in Japan, but impossible. She devotes her book to the struggle of individual lesbians to express a consciousness of their transgressive desires in resistance to this regime of impossibility. I will show that Kakefuda's adoption of a lesbian feminist lens was both purposeful and selective and contingent. In the end, she departs from American lesbian feminist vision of collective action to articulate her own idiosyncratic politics of privacy and a defense of individual desire. In this, she consciously rejected the lesbian feminist activist movement in Japan that was organizing at the time and that was more closely associated with American political lesbian feminist agendas. Although her feminist politics eventually came to be rejected by younger lesbians and superseded by other visions and practices of lesbian social life emerging in recent years, her analysis remains a powerful articulation of the dilemmas facing the out-lesbian subject in Japan in the 1990s and up to the present day. U.S. lesbian feminism was taken up in the late 1970s and early 1980s by a small but energetic lesbian feminist movement in Japan that both embraced and resisted it over the next two decades. Many of the leaders of this movement had spent extensive time abroad, in terms such as lesbian feminism, coming out, closet, homophobia, patriarchy, and above all, Adrienne Rich's compulsory heterosexuality, were quickly absorbed in emerging Japanese lesbian debates. Far from simply accepting the premises of American lesbian feminism, however, Japanese lesbian feminists engaged it both interestedly and skeptically, with a critical distance and a determination to change or discard it where it didn't fit conditions in Japan. Above all, they used this work to define and illuminate their own local conditions and to seek their own local spaces for autonomy and action. At the same time, however, the boundaries between Western and Japanese lesbian histories were and continue to be obscure. Japanese lesbian writing of the time often collapsed the distinctions between American and Japanese lesbian history and experience. The foreign origins of the terms and texts were not necessarily clearly noted or formally cited, and in many cases, Japanese lesbians located the origins of Japanese lesbianism in U.S.-based events, such as Stonewall, and its foremothers and figures important to Western lesbian mobilization, such as Sappho or Radcliffe Hall. For Kakifuda, placed herself in explicit resistance to the women who called themselves lesbian feminist activists in 1980s Japan. Primarily a group that opened the Lesbian Resources Center in Tokyo in 1987. This is the cover of a newsletter that was published by this resource center organized by lesbian feminist activists in Tokyo. And Carrie notes that this stereotypical androgynous communal 70s lesbian feminist look of this group sketched on the cover of the newsletter in the 1980s. Many of these women, she's talking about the activists now in Japan, many of these women had spent extensive time abroad, were highly influenced by American scholars such as Andrea Dworkin and Catherine MacKinnon, and enunciated a strong version of the correct, in quotes, parameters of lesbian identity that echoed some of the more orthodox versions of American lesbian identity politics of the 1970s and 80s. Kakifuda was critical of this orthodoxy in what she felt to be the 1970s lesbian feminist rigidity in Japan, anti-sex stance, and non-inclusive politics, particularly around the issue of bisexuality. However, she was unquestionably also dedicated to her own version of lesbian feminism that was itself in close dialogue with American developments from the 1970s onward. These are described by Bonnie Zimmerman as combining a commitment to female integrity, bonding, and sexual passion with an uncompromising rejection of male-centered ways of thinking and being. Using this definition of lesbian feminism, Kakifuda's commitment, perspective, and agenda in what it means to be a lesbian are unquestionably lesbian feminist. In her book, Kakifuda, who also traveled to the United States for gay pride events, draws both directly and indirectly from American lesbian feminist writing from the 1970s, much of which had been translated into Japanese by the time of her writing. Kakifuda cites translations of writings by psychologist Phyllis Chesler, Our Bodies, Ourselves, The Signs, Lesbian Issue, and other sources. Beyond these direct citations, Kakifuda wrote in a context in which a significant number of translated foundational works of Western lesbian feminism had rapidly gained wide influence in Japan within a few years of their publication. Her focus on lesbian subjectivity is particularly resonant with the American lesbian feminist movement's preoccupation with lesbian consciousness and self-awareness, as articulated in the work of authors such as Radical Lesbians, The Furious Collective, and Adrienne Rich. Reading What It Means to Be a Lesbian against this historical backdrop is not intended to position Kakifuda as a derivative imitative of these American, or in the case of these American sources, but rather makes it possible to attend to what Kath Western has called the identifiably historic time must be taken into account in studies of lesbian and other sexual identities in the context of industrialization and urbanization in advanced economies. The prominent similarities in the projects point to the constraints on women's sexual subjectivity that derive from certain constellations of post-industrial heteronormative patriarchal social norms that prevailed in the U.S. in the 1970s and in Japan in the late 1980s and 90s. These decades in the respective countries saw political economic shifts that allowed large numbers of middle-class women to contemplate the possibility of an independent life, particularly in the cities, through the newly widespread availability and acceptability of jobs and living alone for young single women. In the 1970s in the United States and the 80s and 90s in Japan, these were decades that saw the normalization of the ability of women to earn a living and to survive without the economic resources that a husband provided. It is at this historical juncture that individuation became urgent for middle class, particularly urban women, who, when confronted with their own non-conforming sexual desires, now had the opportunity of naming the choice to act on them as a lesbian choice that transgressed heteropatriarchal family control. And yet, as we shall see for Kakafuda, naming did not easily translate into visibility or challenge this control. Kakafuda opens her text with a denial of the speakability and audibility, indeed a denial of the subjective and intersubjective intelligibility of lesbian as an identity, as a possible identity in Japan. Karen says, I quote this at length to convey the multiple levels of negation that characterize Kakafuda's writing voice and her articulation, or more accurately, non-articulation of identity. Who is a lesbian? This question, it goes without saying, emerged from my process. Here she's quoting Kakafuda. Over the past nearly 10 years of asking myself, who am I? Just because a person points to one element of myself and says, this person is a lesbian, does not mean that based on the same element, I would feel that I am a lesbian. On the contrary, up until a few years ago, I felt strongly, quote, no matter what people around me might think, I am certainly nothing like a lesbian. Now she explains a little bit of this, what all of this means. The empty center of identity here, and this is Karen Kelsky's voice, the empty center of identity here bespeaks for Kakafuda the relentless negation of the lesbian within a patriarchal system that makes an autonomous woman's or lesbian sexuality a non-possibility. Kakafuda locates the origins of this negation, as I noted earlier, in the traditional Japanese family structure, in which women had no autonomous position, but existed only in relation to male authority as daughter, wife, or mother. While acknowledging that Japan's family structure had changed in recent years, Kakafuda argues that its logic continues to deprive Japanese women, both lesbian and straight, of access to autonomous self-knowledge, particularly around sexuality, lesbian or otherwise, apart from the reproductive imperative of the extended family system. Kakafuda argues that Japanese society's compulsory heterosexuality, combined with the injunction against unmarried women living apart from their families, is so all-encompassing that all opportunity for a Japanese woman to choose a life course other than marriage and motherhood was curtailed before it could even be imagined. Kakafuda writes, quote, the fact that there is no visible criticism of lesbian life in Japan derives from the fact that people believe that there, lesbians cannot be. For most people in this society, a lesbian relationship is simply not in their scope of thought, unquote. Kakafuda's analysis of Japan resonates strongly with major themes of 1970s American lesbian feminist criticism, which focused on the invisibility and even the unthinkability of lesbian as a category within patriarchal logic. Penelope and Wolfe, in one of the first volumes of Lesbian Coming Out Stories, wrote, the fact remains that we live in a heterosexist society that denies the existence of lesbians. An atmosphere of such severe oppression that for many of us, the thought of being a lesbian was an impossibility. So here we see a link between Kakafuda and American 1970s lesbian feminist thought. Interestingly, though, while American lesbian criticism rarely named its subject as America and depended on universalizing critique by contrast, By contrast, Kakafuda's writing is meticulous in naming Japan as the context and target of her critique. Further, Kakafuda's writing voice and style diverges from the voices of the American writers in her studied evasion of the I, of the singular speaking voice as locus of a fixed, visible individual and community identity. American lesbian feminist writers base their work in a faith in individual and community visibility. Their repeated trope of moving from shadows to light and then silence to speech assumed a performed subject. The I marks the authority of personal experience, and for American lesbians, the personal narrative, particularly the coming out story, forms their sort of tribal lore, the myth of origins. By contrast, Kakafuda's opening paragraph, quoted in your book, is the very opposite of a foundationalist identity claim. And indeed, throughout the book, Kakafuda steadily denies either a biological or political core truth to lesbian experience, her own or others, in what is often quoted as the most direct, ardent statement of her lesbian identity in the entire book. Kakafuda writes, quote, "I gradually came to see that I, myself, am one part of lesbian reality." Yet Kakafuda by no means moves this anti-essentialist stance to a valorization of a playfully performativity of gender along queer lines. On the contrary, there is no space for play in this analysis. It's deadly serious. Indeed, the text is a relentless indictment of the violence enacted on women, primarily lesbian but also straight, by this, i.e. Japanese society. Kakafuda is insistent on the particularized oppression suffered by Japanese women at the hands of what she views as uniquely abhorrent and totalizing Japanese patriarchal regime. Thus, she embarks on an extended comparison of Japan with Nazi Germany in its intolerance of difference, fixation on racial and sexual purity, and control of women for the purposes of reproducing the nation. She argues that by relentlessly bullying and attacking anyone who is different from the norm, Japan follows in the footsteps of Nazis by normalizing the social murder of its disabled population, including not just lesbians, but also Ainu, Okinawans, and Korean Japanese. This regime of terror, she argues, leaves lesbians to grow up utterly isolated, despondent, and filled with a profound fear and self-loathing. Fear and self-loathing were also central to the accounts of pre-liberation American lesbians. As Abbott and Love wrote in Sappho Was a Right on Woman, quote, "Society's demands for invisibility means that the lesbian suffers emotional imprisonment. Spontaneity, freedom of expression, and the direct expression of personality are not hers," unquote. However, Kakafuda holds that for Japanese women, their origin lies in the most immediate and violent form of Japanese lesbian oppression in Japan, the inescapability of lesbian pornographic spectacle for straight men. According to Kakafuda, at the same time that the lesbian is undiscovered as a subject in Japan, she's pervasive, indeed omnipresent, as an object. And by this, Kakafuda means an object of a straight male pornographic gaze or imaginary. Women's dilemma derives from the fact that while lesbian is the term adopted by Japanese lesbians to describe their own identity, at the same time, when it was shortened to lesu, it's a Japanese term, one of the most visible categories of pornography available in the omnipresent Japanese porn market. So the term for the Japanese term for lesbian then was bowdlerized, if you will, to stand for a category of pornography for Japanese men. For Kakafuda, the tragedy of lesbian experience lay in the fact that modern Japanese obsession with pornographic depictions of two women having sex for voyeuristic straight male consumption deprived actual lesbians of a psychosexual identity in which to claim a social space. The unbreakable cultural association of lesbian with the lesbian pornographic spectacle, she argues, causes women who seek to employ the term to find themselves not just instantly reduced to a sexual object, but more damagingly exiled from the identity As non-heterosexual, committed to intimate relations with other women, resistant to patriarchal authority, this identity that they sought to assert by claiming the term in the first place. This exile from the self, Kakafuda argues, causes a splitting apart of identity from which the potential Japanese lesbian subject cannot recover. In her view, the result of this originary event in lesbian lives is a trauma. Quote, when a woman attempts to use lesbian as a label to express her positive acknowledgement of a particular private aspect of herself, she feels as if she's being ripped apart by the pornographic associations of the word lesbian. You are caught in the pain of being yourself and not yourself. Unquote. The lesbian as object, then, is not recuperable or recoverable in Kakafuda's vision. That is, it cannot be recoverable as the lesbian as subject. The lesbian in Japan is always watched but never seen, and while visible, never audible. Kakafuda acknowledges that different women in Japan's lesbian community had deployed tactics to resist this appropriation, such as calling themselves something else. They took another part of the word for lesbian, ben, and used that as the term for themselves, etc. So desperate were they. Kakafuda goes on to say that the lack of a subject position is expressed in a discussion of the meaning of consciousness. I'm not going to use the Japanese word. For lesbian writers, consciousness referred to the elusive awareness of women's own oppression that was masked and naturalized within compulsory heterosexuality, and also to the power, autonomy, integrity of self that women must develop to resist it. To lack this consciousness was to continue in the secondary oppressed role assigned to women in a patriarchal culture. To gain consciousness was to claim wholeness and autonomy. The ideal of gaining greater consciousness, of living more consciously and thus autonomously, lay at the heart of much feminist activism in the post-war period, and much activism in the 80s and 90s. Thus, Kakafuda exhorts women to seek inside themselves the something that she argues comes before their socialization into patriarchy and heterosexuality. The consciousness question has extraordinary resonances with the focus on consciousness and consciousness raising in the 1970s, U.S. lesbian feminism. Adrienne Rich sought to define a female consciousness which is political, aesthetic, and erotic, and which refuses to be contained in the culture of passivity. Kakafuda focuses particularly on sexual consciousness, which she claims was stolen by men in Japan. She argues that Japanese women had no practice even speaking of sex due to the taboo against discussing sexuality within the family. As a result, women had no way of knowing that they have or have sexual desire, let alone their potential for transgressive lesbian sexual desires. Quote, lesbians do not necessarily have sex, and that sex is not necessarily conscious, she writes, is the norm. Sexual awareness and autonomy was central in the search for consciousness in the United States as well. So Kakafuda finds that not having a sexual consciousness means that, as she has observed, a number of lesbians in Japan never have any sex at all. And therefore, never having any sex, pleasure is also excluded from lesbian consciousness. She argues that because pleasure is always and only individual, its pursuit, from her point of view, requires privacy. Kakafuda makes respect for privacy of the individual the foundation of her political vision. An effort to challenge a Japan that, in her view, completely naturalizes and normalizes sameness. This privacy is a kind of public privacy, an abstract right that should accrue to all individuals to seek their own various pleasures without submission to familial or social obligations. At the end of the book, after advancing a few points about the need for lesbians to come out in order to be visible to both the straight world and other lesbians, she quickly links this imperative to the question of privacy. Kakafuta begins by noting that many lesbians refuse to come out for fear it will open the door to assaults on their privacy. She argues, however, that on the contrary, coming out is the essential first step in defense of privacy. Quote, I came out only because I want to protect my privacy and reject being oppressed by the heterosexual norm and having my privacy exposed by this society that treats the heterosexual crowd as normal, unquote. Coming out, she argues, forces Japanese society to learn the appropriate response to people who are different, which is to protect their right to privacy. Privacy is the foundation for a defense of individual freedom, which is the cornerstone of respect for diversity and difference. What is required is the freedom from society's interference that will allow diversity to flourish. Quote, this is Kakafuta again, what I hope for is not for women to be reckless. It would be enough that my privacy would not be oppressed or invaded. Kakafuta's insistence on privacy as the ultimate right is linked to her refusal of a unitary subject position. Kakafuta expresses reservations about using the term lesbian at all, for fear of its repressive, unitary, and essentializing associations. She states that she deploys the term lesbian in her book as a temporary tactic. Quote, it does not sit well for me to simply situate myself within the binary categories of homosexuality, heterosexuality, unquote. Indeed, Kakafuta's political vision is based ultimately on a denial of identity in toto. My ultimate goal would be an environment in which I do not have to have or imposed on me, a unitary self. It would be ideal if distinct categories, including lesbian, homosexual, woman, and man, ceased to have any meaning. However, her rejection, this is Karen Kelsky speaking, however, her rejection of the subject causes Kakafuta to evade the question of lesbian and others' agency in the achievement of this environment. While American lesbian feminists in the 1970s advocated consciousness raising to explicitly redress women's ignorance of their own oppression, quote, defying the cultural injunction against female self-assertion and subjectivity, unquote, Kakafuta does not mention it or any other method of lesbian direct action in her book. Here and elsewhere in What It Means to Be a Lesbian, Kakafuta depends on a grammar of the negative. Quote, people do not believe it is possible, unquote. Quote, the lesbian has not yet been discovered, unquote. I cannot be free, etc., etc. It is as if this grammar of negation expresses the negative relation of the lesbian to society. And that's the place where this paper began. It also reflects Kakafuta's political stance in the book, which asserts the impossibility of any direct political challenge to lesbian unspeakability in Japan, something she repeatedly contrasts to the circumstances in the United States. She writes over and over again of the impossibility of confronting an opponent who refuses to acknowledge that you exist. Quote, if someone says at work or school, I'm a lesbian, she'll be injured less by overt discrimination than by smirks and rumors that there is no way to confront and no way to protest. And the only one who will be made uncomfortable will be the lesbian herself. Kakafuta's reliance on a negative grammar continually renders the processes of change obscure. Thus, she concludes a section on the importance of women's networks in challenging the isolation of the nuclear family, quote, the extent to which we are aware that we have been divided and made to compete with one another, and that we must remake women's relationships from the ground up, things are unlikely to return to the way they were. Indeed, the locus of change seems to reside in the straight world. This, quote, this society profoundly hates people who are different and won't accept anything that's not familiar. It needs to be understood that it is not possible for the feeling that they don't understand us to be normalized as the basis for discrimination. Unquote. So she's talking about her experiences. It is as if for Kakafuta, the lesbian subject, still undiscovered, is not yet imaginable as a social actor capable of any overt challenge to Japan's epistemology of sameness. The question, according to Karen Kelsky, is less what is lesbian identity than the question of what is the status of the individual in society. And for a woman, can the individual be an actor rather than merely an object of others' actions? In both Japan in the 1990s and in the U.S. in the 1970s, the political economic shifts that permitted some women sufficient economic independence to choose where to live and with whom precipitated a crisis of consciousness and subjectivity for individual women confronting their own transgressive desires. In both cases, women confronted a struggle between competing definitions of proper subjecthood. Kakifuda shows us that in Japan's case, however, the epistemological struggle over women's subjectivity was a struggle also over two competing discourses of privacy that were increasingly in conflict for women in the late 1980s and the 1990s. There was a discourse of publicly recognized personal privacy that Kakifuda embraced that prioritizes the right of the individual to express and act on desires free from surveillance, interference, and punishment. This westernized discourse, however, collided directly with an older discourse of privacy, a discourse of family discretion that privileges the family unit over the individual and the right of the family to surveil its members in order to prohibit any public disclosures or behaviors that would potentially shame the family as a whole. This privacy of the older social contract in Japan permitted members their private sexual diversions as long as they held to the non-negotiable demands of marriage, reproduction, and continuation of the family line. Studies of homosexuality in Japan have uniformly emphasized the operations of this latter form of family privacy as the primary location of social control around the question of same-sex behaviors. Social constraints on homosexuality are organized along the principal dimensions of duty, honor, and responsibility to the family. These accounts, says Karen, Kelski speaking here, however, do not take into account the specific gendered status of women and the historical context that allows specific women to challenge older discourses of family obligation. Kakifuda, however, deploys this publicly recognized privacy to mobilize westernized concepts to challenge Japanese feudal traditions. The Japanized English term of feudal tradition carries with it the ideals of individualism and personal autonomy. However, her text grammar of the negation exemplifies the tension between this notion of public privacy and the continuing imperative of family honor. We'll get to some slides in just a minute here. I'm sure this is very difficult for you to listen to after several minutes here. This continuing tension, she means between this public privacy and the traditional family or the notion of family honor, is visible in the ironies of lesbian life in Japan today, that the vast majority of lesbians freely name themselves as lesbian, but operate in spheres that remain almost entirely hidden from their families, co-workers, and the public at large. This is evidence for this contradiction. There is vibrant lesbian social life in Japan's cities, but it remains almost completely limited to nighttime events. And here we're going to show some scenes from Club Panache, some flyers for lesbian club events, and so forth. Let me see if I can get this up. Here we go. Here's Club Panache, a lesbian club. Another ad for a club. And here's Carmilla, is a lesbian porn magazine that was published from for 3 years, from 2002 to 2005. And she has a sample photo spread that shows typical lesbian fetish-related content. Let's look at this. There we go. The abundant lesbian writing online and in lesbian comics revolves around the dilemmas of keeping one's sexual identity hidden from family, co-workers, and peers. Here, what we see is an openly lesbian comic book, Honey and Honey, that revolves mostly around the couple being closeted. A lesbian television show is running for the first time this year, but it is the U.S. drama, The L Word. This particular image is on a complimentary CD of L-word episodes included in a popular women's magazine called Frau. A careful reading of Kakafuda's writing in its historical context and with an eye to its parallels with and influences from developments in the United States makes it clear that Japanese lesbians continue to struggle to balance two competing discourses of privacy, both compelling and indispensable. The result was and continues to be a contradictory and compromised social space, both unprecedentedly open to transgressive sexual desire and yet enduringly inhospitable to women's individual sexual self-expression. By and large, Japanese lesbians have found it untenable to risk coming out for privacy in the ways that Kakafuda hoped. They insist that the risk, vis-a-vis their friends and their places of employment, remain too high. Through her writing and subsequent community work, Kakafuda sought to express the tensions and anguish inherent in this space of contradiction. She did not, however, resolve them for the community or for herself. She started a magazine, Labris, right after her book came out, which continued for 3 years. And here's the cover of this. Labris, the double-bladed Amazon axe, was a leading symbol of American lesbian feminist organizing. However, as if to embody the struggle over the meaning of privacy, she disappeared shortly after Labris folded in 1995. She dropped out of the scene, retreated to the countryside, and has not been heard from publicly since. People say she is suffering from mental illness. They mention schizophrenia. And lesbians I meet in fieldwork decline to speak much about Kakafuda, except with a kind of hushed, distant respect. In her last writing in a lesbian zine that she founded, she wrote, quote, "No more Kakafuda, the lesbian. The work we must do can only be done alone," unquote. To conclude, the struggles around the lesbian subject as individual in 1990s Japan set the stage for American lesbian feminism to be actively embraced for its critical energy and its commitment to consciousness, and then set aside for its focus on visibility and liberation politics. While Kakafuda put herself out into public as the spokesperson for recognition of the diversity and multiplicity of sexual identities in ways that seemed to presage a queer turn, her focus remained always on the oppression of women, their need for a specifically women's sexual consciousness and their inalienable right to be left alone. In turn, her negative epistemology of lesbian subjectivity left Kakafuda to lapse into silence and ultimately into her own negative relation to Japan's subsequent lesbian movement. Her work and her life, however, give compelling insight into the uneven, contested, and contradictory terrain of lesbian subjectivity in Japan and to the multiple ways that lesbian feminists travel in the world. Thank you. You're so polite. I appreciate it.
Please join me once again in thanking Professor Ann Hill. That will conclude our lecture. The panel discussion will begin at 4:30 in this room. Thank you for coming.